I found another instance of lying. This time it's not physicists that are lying, it's electrical engineering professors and the schools of electrical engineering. The professors on behalf of the schools of electrical engineering are lying to their students. Actually it's the designers, the software designers of the simulators, the electrical simulators that the students use in their lab section of their course. It's the software designers that are guilty of lying to the students, because they have created, in the SPICE family of simulators that are considered the standard in the industry, they have created a standard in which ground is defined as a place you sink energy into, but the reverse is not the case. And yet everything in electricity is reversible, unlike biology, where sometimes things are not reversible. In electrical energy, it is reversible. If you can do one thing, you can do the opposite. And so if you can sink energy into the ground, you can take energy out of the ground, but they're not taught that. They're saying, no, it's just a zero reference. It's just used as a reference for 0 volts to do your voltage drop calculations for the circuit, and that's all it is. And so the simulator does just that and nothing more. It uses ground as a reference. Now, Paul Falstead stepped out of the box, so to speak, of convention, and when he designed his simulator, he created two current sources that are not available to the SPICE family of simulators. Namely, he created a current source in the ground connection, in the ground component, the potential for that to occur if you set up negative impedance. And he took away the necessity for using ground as a reference, so he built it into his calculations automatically, so you don't have to use a ground. You know, you can get away without it, but SPICE, no, you've got to use a ground. And it's always 0 volts as your reference. Meanwhile, Paul Falstead actually also used another current source. He wrote it into his inductors and capacitors. In particular, his transformers are given like a cocaine boost of current sourcing. So if you combine capacitors with coils, you can get some pretty interesting results, especially when you have a transformer as your coil. You don't even have to use both coils, just one side of the transformer if all you need is one coil. A lot better off than using a single coil in his simulator. It really provides current when you arrange things in a very nice way, if you arrange things in an appropriate way. But getting back to ground, so literally everybody is brainwashed to believe that the ground... And so David Bowling had this argument with, I think he was a novice, on Energetic Forum. This was a few years ago. I remember the argument because I took David's side and I came in with evidence. I can't remember what it was. David was, arguing that the ground is not a reference, it's a source. It's a sink, but it's also a source. And the other guy was going, no, it's neither. It's just a reference. It has no value whatsoever. It's just somewhere to pin your circuit to as a reference, and that's all it's good for. Well, the evidence I came in with, I have no idea what it was, but the point of this recording is that I now have new evidence. The realization that simulators are different in how they define ground. And that is the only reason why David Bowling was having an argument with this fellow in the first place. Otherwise, they'd both be in agreement. The fellow was formally trained, while David Bowling gets his information from his experience. His experience is his source of information. So naturally, they're going to have a difference of opinion because they're not getting their information from the same place. Well, now that I've been able to realize, because see, I was trying really hard yesterday to make another go at it, trying to simulate Byron Brubaker's version or rendition of Tesla's hairpin circuit. And I've tried in the past, I don't know, a few years ago, every time I tried, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't get it to do anything useful or interesting. Yet it bothered me, because here's a guy, Byron, who's a savvy electrical engineer, practically a wizard in his own right, who can do just about anything he wants with electricity, and is dismayed and disgusted with the state of affairs of common sense. So he's given up trying to help us and educate us. But he gave me the right to use his hairpin circuit, because he thought, well, you know, nobody else is doing anything with it. You might as well I'll give it to you. You know, you do see what you can do about it. Just give me credit. So that's fine. But I could never do anything with it, because all I can do is simulate. I can't build anything. I don't allow myself to. I don't have the money to. I don't have the expertise. I don't have the measuring tools. You know, I don't have a safe place, you know, in case something should go awry. I don't want to start a fire in the place that I live. So, that's all I can do. So, it's been very hard for me to simulate. In fact, it's been impossible. So yesterday I was having a tough time at it. I spent a little while, a couple hours, and I went to sleep. I was really, I'm giving up. So I had a very long nap, very restful, peaceful, deep nap. I woke up in bliss, and I was in no hurry to get out of bed. But I had, as I was laying there falling asleep, though, before I fell asleep, I was working the problem through in my head, and I figured out what the problem was. So I already knew before I went to sleep. It was just I needed the sleep anyway, because I was so stressed out over this straining at trying to figure this thing out. So what I had figured out was the simulators are not defining ground in the same way. And it makes all the difference, because I don't use Paul Falstead's simulator anymore, because it's so hard to understand how to build what has been simulated in Paul Falstead's simulator, because he makes it so easy to create over-unity and negative impedance, if over-unity resulting from negative impedance. It's just so dang easy. And so it made me question whether or not I should keep using it. You know, at first I thought, well, maybe it's not realistic. Maybe it's just theoretical, blah, blah, blah. Oh, he admits to his transformers being able to pass DC. Oh, that might be a problem, because everybody nowadays says you cannot do that in a transformer. It's all fantasy. It's not something you can actually do. Yet a PMH from Edward Leetskalnin, that's exactly what you do. You store DC. And when you release it, well, then you've passed it. So you've passed it when you store it, and you pass it when you release it. But the whole point of a PMH is holding on to it. And nobody focuses on the transfer part. So it is a transfer of DC. Unlike people say, and this, oh, I put this on the internet years ago. I think it was like eight years ago on Energetic Forum, that the PMH is the very thing. It vindicates the very thing that students of electrical engineering and professors and whatnot say cannot be done, that a transformer cannot pass DC. But there's something else going on in Paul Falstead's simulator that makes it very unique, and I can't figure it all out. So consequently, I don't use it anymore. So I use Spice family of simulators instead, and they're very quirky. It's kind of, I've come to the conclusion that coils in SPICE are assumed to be copper, that there's no iron coils allowed. And so the bonding, the magnetic coupling that goes on between the coil and, if it has a core, its core, is questionable, flimsy at best. It's ridiculously flimsy. Whereas Nathan Stubblefield and the Amon brothers, you did iron core and iron coils. All of it was iron. So the coupling was maximal, and the remanence was there at its height, which means the transfer of DC was now an option that, see, it's all about copper, making it not an option, and then furthermore, using a core material that's not solid iron, that's a matrix. That breaks up the field the minute you take away the source. The imposition of a source, the field vanishes. PMH, that doesn't work. The whole point is to show magnetic remanence, so you have to use a core material that's appropriate. Anyway, a composition, when I say matrix, a composition of something other than solid iron mixed in there to break up the field so that when you take away the source of energy, the field disappears as well. So that's not appropriate for these types of circuits, and I understand that. But all the same, I've always used SPICE now because I just couldn't understand how you're supposed to deal with Paul-Falstead if you're going to make a build. Well, the SPICE doesn't help either because they have this zero reference plane for ground that cannot be a source. It's merely a sink. And now I see that's wrong. First of all, I have to admit that free energy is not free. It does not come from nowhere. It's simply the circuit becomes a negative impedant pump, a reactive pump of a certain type that seeks out energy in its environment and draws that energy to itself like a vacuum cleaner. It literally can send out feelers to look for that energy, just like an ant will go in, or a housefly will travel in a seemingly random fashion, yet they get the job done. They find what it is they're looking for. Like that, when channels of ionized air, let's say, form surrounding the Cosmo generator of the Amon brothers, the pathways keep changing, just like the pathways surrounding a Tesla lamp, a plasma lamp. Just like a plasma lamp. It's looking for something to latch onto. And you know what? If you put your finger on a plasma lamp, it pretty quickly finds your finger. Doesn't take very long, even though when it doesn't find it, it's looking at random to find it when it's not there to be found. So the random merely means it's hunting, it's groping. And yet it could be that when the source arrives, it immediately knows its location. And this was because this is something that Nathan Stubblefield had invented, a pithball device. He knew the minute somebody stepped onto his property where they were located, and he'd sneak up behind them and go, boo, you know, what are you doing here? And they didn't see him coming because he knew in advance, long before they arrived at his cabin, that he had already come within, you know, quite a distance away at the edge of the property. Because he had his power generators distributed, you know, and planted underground. And so they created a field, and then his pithball device was letting him know when the field was disturbed. You know, when you walk near an AM radio, it changes its reception, especially if you put your hand right close to its antenna. It changes its reception of radio waves. So that's probably what people were doing when they were walking into his territory. They were disturbing the field that he was generating, and all he had to do was locate where that disturbance was. So I'm guessing that that's like a plasma lamp. Some of these devices, like Cyril Amon's device, sends out feelers looking when it can't find a source. But once a source shows up, it knows immediately where it is and latches onto it using an ionic channel. Now, this is the method that Wilhelm Reich used to down a UFO. He didn't plan it. It was a happenstance. It was just an unhappy coincidence. Because he was just trying to bust a cloud, dissolve it, and he was pointing his cloud buster set of pipes that were grounded to a moving body of water. He just pointed it at this cloud, and gradually, little by little, it slowly dissolved until finally it was no longer there, and lo and behold, there was a UFO in the middle. Now, the creation of a cloud is no different than the creation of smog. You have to have certain conditions of humidity, 70% minimum, and positive ionization of the atmosphere relative to ground, not negative. If it goes negative, then you have fresh, clean air. And what happens is, when you have positive, you have an inversion, what's called an inversion layer. Everybody who lives in LA knows this. You have an inversion layer in which the warm air is below the cool air, The cool air is clear. The warm air is filled with smoke and particles and fog and moisture, and that creates the smog. And when you have conditions like after a rainstorm, the inversion layer drops to ground level. In other words, the positive disappears. The positive ionization disappears. And so the negative inversion layer that used to sit on top of it drops to ground level. And so now all of your airspace above ground level is negatively charged and clear of particles, particulates, and moisture particles. So you have no compositions in the air hanging there to impede breathing, and it's a beautiful day. You can breathe clean air, and you don't have to labor breathing or sting your eyes as, oh my God, smog used to be very bad in the early 60s. I remember September, October, it would be very bad. You couldn't breathe. Your eyes would tear. Oh, it was horrible. It's gotten a lot better. Anyway, so the conditions for this cloud to form around the UFO were exactly the same. But he changed it. He grounded out the electrostatic field that UFO was creating, not because it wanted to hide in a cloud necessarily. That was an extra benefit of the moisture conditions and whatnot and the ionization of the environment at the time. They were simply creating an electrostatic field because UFOs have to, because they don't have coils for reactive power to charge up. And then you recover your reactive power and you turn off your motor, your electric motor. So, but in a UFO, they got to dump their magnetism into the surrounding space. And if it were not for also dumping a humongous electrostatic field to act as their artificial coil, their pseudo-coil, to help retain that magnetic field that they're putting out, because it's the magnetism that's causing the anti-gravity, but without a coil there, they would lose the magnetism to their environment. They have to put it out into their environment to manipulate their environment, to manipulate inertia. So they need an electrostatic field to serve as a pseudo-coil to hold that magnetism there so that they can manipulate their inertia. Without the electrostatic field, their ability to operate is zero. And that's what happened when Wilhelm Reich pointed his Cloudbuster at the UFO, not knowing that he was pointing at a UFO. He neutralized gradually the electrostatic field by grounding it out to the moving body of water. And not because there was a lightning bolt traveling between the two points in space, but because there was a channel of ionized air molecules that you couldn't see. It was gradually siphoning off the charge, the electrostatic charge surrounding that UFO. So this is what Sierra Leman was drawing from, primarily, was the electrostatic field surrounding his device. And that's the ionized channel of feelers, like a plasma lamp, that's sending out these feelers looking for a magnetic source, a source of current, a magnetic field indicating a source of current that it can latch onto and steal current from. But it first has to send out electrostatic feelers to succeed at locating a magnetic field. In other words, an electrostatic field whose voltage charge can be made to vary. Because if you can't force it to change its charge, you won't be able to suck off energy in a manner that will benefit you as far as current gain is concerned. So you want to be able to change the voltage of an electrostatic field to be able to get the benefit of current from that voltage-oriented field. But if you can't change it, then you're not going to get any benefit of current, because current is all about the change of voltage. Up or down, you know, will determine which way the current flows, but regardless, that's the whole point of current. That's the whole definition of current, that it's a consequence of a changing voltage field. It's not something unique, different from voltage, except that it's a field of change of voltage. Anyway, so we don't call it electrostatic for that reason. We call it electromagnetic for a different reason, at least because it doesn't change. It's not static. So we're dealing with fields And this is another thing that students of electrical engineering are brainwashed not to think in terms of. They think in terms of the current traveling down the wire. They never think about the field surrounding it. The electrostatic field or the magnetic field is the only reason why the current is there in the first place. The only reason why the voltage is there in the first place is because of the field surrounding it. Anyway, so this gives me the notion that it's okay for me to modify my SPICE simulations to accommodate the fact that they have not, the people, the designers of SPICE, have not given us the correct definition of ground. They have given us a false definition of ground to suit their purposes, and certainly not suit ours if we're looking for free energy. So naturally you're going to get the naysayers say, oh, there's no such thing as a free lunch, because they've created an environment that's unsuitable for us to discover by happy accident that it is possible to have a free lunch that you don't have to pay for if somebody else pays for it. The environment or the grid, if it gets in the way. So we're not allowed, and I can see why, because they don't want people stealing from the grid, and so this establishes the grid and maintains it beyond its necessity. We could have given up the grid ages ago, but because of the standardization of our institutions of learning, not only in the field of medicine, but also in the field of engineering in the 1920s, by a huge influx of money from foundations who wanted to dictate what was taught and how it's taught and what's not taught, it's pretty obvious that it was to maintain the status quo. And this has been going on for a century. When we could have changed, any time during that century, we could have had change occur by happy accident, just by people bumping into the notions of free energy. And then the notion of people holding onto the grid, making a profit from the grid, or sequestering money via the grid, charging us for the energy usage of the grid, is another way to look at it, taking money out of circulation for something that need not be, an expense that need not be there, you know, short of all the other expenses of our cost of living, the cost of energy need not be there, because you can get the energy from the environment, which they do. And we know this from studying even the telegraph system. If you spaced out earth batteries too far apart, you'd end up getting more energy than before, not less. And you have to wonder where it was coming from. It was probably coming from the earth, because they use the earth as a return path anyway. But if they spaced the batteries, the earth batteries, too close together, like the transition point was something like 150, 160, 140 miles, somewhere in that. So if you made it too closely spaced out along the length of the transmission of the telegraph line, you wouldn't get the overunity. You would simply be totally dependent on the batteries. And that makes sense, because you're giving it an excess of voltage so that the circuitry, the transmission line, cannot go hungry looking for it elsewhere. And so you don't get overunity because you didn't make the system slightly hungry to make it look for energy. Because when it's hungry, apparently that's a spontaneous situation in which you get negative impedance just by creating hunger alone. Although I'm sure there's something else going on, such as an open transmission line in conjunction with an underfeeding of voltage creates that negative impedance situation. Anyway, be that as it may. So students are taught or encouraged, this brainwashing is encouraged, that everything is isolated. You got to analyze it in isolation. And in order to create a self-fulfilling proposition out of that, a circular reasoning out of that, we intentionally tell people, well, there's no such thing as a free lunch. You got to feed the circuit everything it needs plus a little extra so that it's going to lose it instead of gaining it. Rather than underfeeding it, you feed a little more. So it's like the difference I found when I was fasting or eating more lightly, I couldn't sweat. But if I overstuffed myself with every food imaginable on God's face of the earth, I'd sweat like crazy. I'd stink like a pig. In fact, there are stories of King Louis the VI. His nickname was El Gordo. La Gordo? I don't know how they say it in French. That's at least, I think, in Spanish, Gordo. Gorda, Gordo. He was so fat and he smelled of rotten eggs. And he had to travel with his chef and his cook, and every few minutes they'd have to stop, lay out a table, lay out all the food, and he'd gorge himself. It was unbelievable. The only reason why I learned about him was because I was reading up on Eleanor of Aquitaine, because she married Henry II Plantagenet of England later on, but initially she was wedded to Louis VII, who was called Louis le Monk. Because he was bookish. He just stayed indoors and read all the time, and he was no good as a leader anyway. I'm getting way off topic. So when you overfeed a situation, of course it's going to lose to its environment. That's all we're taught, entropy, that, oh, the circuit's going to lose to its environment, so you got to give it an excess. No, it's the other way around. You gave it an excess, so it has to lose to its environment. If you underfed it, it has to suck from its environment. God, now I'm angry. Because you see how it's so self-fulfilling, this circular reasoning? We are told something that is not justifiable to be told that. We're told about entropy as a law of nature when in fact it's a command that if we don't follow it, God forbid, we'll find out that the reverse is just as true. If you don't overfeed your circuit, if you underfeed it, there's a very good chance that you'll stumble across situations in which the circuit will suck energy from its environment because it was a certain type of circuit, circuit that could encourage sucking energy from the environment only if you also underfed it. So it's two conditions. It had to be constructed a certain way to encourage negative impedance, but only under the condition of underfeeding the circuit. Feeding it less calories of energy than it is required to run it. And it's going to go looking for the extra to make up the difference. But only because you fed it less than it needs and because you set it up to look for extra that it needs. Those two conditions have to be there. But I'm describing it very broadly, you know, like a block diagram, in block diagram fashion. Because if you can't get that conception into your head, you're never going to understand the situation as to why this pursuit of free energy still lingers. Oh, they like to say on the naysayers, the poo-pooers, like to say, oh, well, it's so romantic, this idea, you know. It's like looking for your lover, your soulmate. Oh, my God, inventors, wannabe inventors, keep looking for it. And, oh, they'll never find it because it doesn't exist, because physics disallows it. No, social standards disallows it. Physics has nothing to do with it. This is a misappropriation of physics. Physics has nothing to do with it. To justify a social engineering, a brainwashing, a dogmatism, enslavement, I'm short of words. All I know is, well, I said enough. I don't have to find more ways of saying it or more emotionally provocative ways of saying it. It's bad enough just as it is. The thought alone is bad enough. And most people don't want to go there. Even if they're open to the idea, they don't want to go there because it's disgusting. Because look at the implications that the majority of the population goes along with it like a bunch of lemmings. They never bother to question it. Well, no, I guess not. Now, I don't have to worry about it because I don't care, which is kind of suicidal when you think about it, but I don't care. So I can afford to not care about, well, I'm ridiculed and I have this horrible reputation surrounding me. Yeah, but I didn't put it there. Everybody might claim that I'm the perpetrator of that reputation, but no. I'm the perpetrator of circumstances as to what people, what opinions people have of the circumstances surrounding me and engulfing me. That's their opinion, not mine. I'd paint a totally different picture. I get people telling me I'm a genius. I don't know if I'd go that far, but still, not all the same, how you spin facts is a whole other story, and it has more to do with opinion than anything else. But it's to encourage keeping the remainder, the rest of humanity, from ever bothering to take me seriously. Well, I take me seriously, or else I wouldn't keep doing this. Because I knew in my heart I was right, even though I didn't understand it. And all I do is understand it better over time. And there's nothing anybody can do to change my mind in their direction. They might momentarily, or used to, but I have so much momentum behind me now because I used to go their route. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're right and I'm wrong. But I didn't leave it at that, though. That's the difference. I said, okay, why are they right and why am I wrong? And I would not sit with that until I figured it out. And when I did, I was surprised or shocked or whatever to find out that they're lying to themselves at the very least, but to me, no more. Because what they were professing themselves to be right and on what, you know, premise, you know, they were describing to justify that opinion and that conclusion turned out to be false. It turned out to be not adequately thought through, and in some cases downright hypocritical and self-contradictory, like this notion that some electrical engineers, they love to pull this one, and I hate it when they do now because I know better. But the first time they did it, I didn't know any better. I was confused. Oh, that, sure, reactive power, you could call that free energy, but it's useless. No, it's lossless. That's why it accumulates. That's why you get so much of it if you wait around. Whether it's a million seconds or a few nanoseconds, depending on the efficiency of your free energy circuit, all you have to do is wait, and it'll accumulate. And then when it gets large enough, the complex value that is hidden and useless meets up with resistance, and the phases of voltage and current get put back together again, and now it becomes negative. It becomes a generation of power, the production of power. Because it was converted, it turns into the definition of the generation of power, even though you didn't generate it. You simply accumulated useless, lossless, reactive power. So what are they saying that it's useless? They didn't go far enough. If it's useless, it can't be spent. If it can't be spent, it cannot be lost. If it can't be lost, it can only build up. And if it can only build up, it must accumulate. And if it accumulates, it'll get larger. All you have to do is wait. Don't try to correct it. Don't try to stop it. Let it keep doing it, what it's doing. And it'll keep building up, until finally the resistance in the circuit will get in the way to a degree that it becomes noticeable that now you're converting, by simple resistance alone, you're converting that reactive, useless, lossless power into heat, if nothing else. Whoa, look at all this free heat. I didn't have to do anything. Free heat, calories of energy. I didn't have to put there. Appeared out of nowhere, seemingly. No, it came about via a conversion, a thermodynamic conversion from reactive power into heat. But you didn't see the reactive power build up because you weren't busy paying attention, because it's, you know, kind of invisible. You know, you have to infer its existence. You can't see it or measure it anyway. You have to infer it based on various clues. And you put the clues together and you say, oh, there must be a certain amount of reactive power there. And all you can do is take a guess and suppose that it's there, because you don't know that it's there. But if it converts into real power, then you say, oh, well, see, it was there all along. I must have been right. But you don't know that for certain. You only know that as an inference. Anyway, so this idea of ground being a zero reference and nothing more is bogus. It's a lie. It's a sink of energy just like space. To say space has no energy is a lie. It's just we don't tap into it on a daily basis, so how do we know, you know? It's how much energy is there. It all depends on the negative impedance of your circuit. How efficient are you at sucking the energy out of a volume of mass or a volume of space? Otherwise, you won't know. And with the right circuitry, it doesn't matter how much energy is in that volume of space or matter. You just suck out whatever's available. That's the nice part about free energy circuits. It matters a little how much energy is in your surroundings, but it doesn't really change things a whole lot. You're still going to get it anyway, regardless of where you get it from. And if it changes how quickly or how slowly, it in my experience, it doesn't change a whole lot. It's like 30% or something. I don't know. It's when you're dealing with, especially with fractions of a second, like nano or a microseconds, it's certainly not going to matter, even if it's a substantial difference. So especially in that respect, it doesn't matter at all in any practical sense. Anyway, I get off on various tangents because it's kind of emotional for me, but this is what I got to deal with, is the truth of the matter and the blatant ignorance that's going to pervade society for the next several centuries at the rate we're going. I'm just a little blip. I'll come and then I'll be gone. And everybody will go, phew, he died finally. We don't have to worry about him anymore. I mean, I'm a nag, right? That's all people, Stack Exchange, they can't stand me. It's as if all I'm there for is to harass them, because they're literally robots. They're trained to behave a certain way and answer a certain way. And so you're not learning anything new. We're not gaining any new knowledge, because the way Stack Exchange is set up is to maintain what they were taught and distribute it. They're simply a point of distribution, but they certainly are not a point for innovation, unless it's a minor little thing. You know, nothing that'll upset the status quo of society. You know, a little innovation here, a little innovation there. You know, a little crumb to look good, you know. Oh, we're being benevolent, you know, we're not being merciless. We're actually allowing a little bit of innovation to occur. Fine. So it's not without mercy, it's not without compassion, but 98% of it is without compassion and without mercy. So I don't hang out there too often. It's like trying to stir up a bunch of hornets, and it's not really hornets, because most of the time they just get confused. They act like they don't understand a word I'm saying, and they admit as much. So it's literally, they are heavily, heavily programmed to the point that they can't imagine anything different than what they were taught.